This is Kathy Hart, host of the Health First Radio Show. Today, in our first half, we're going to listen to a pre-record of Kathleen Trottier. She is the author of The Fittest Future Self. And in the second half, we have Dr. Cass Ingram, an author and doctor, is going to be speaking about wild oregano. So we'll go back to the Health First News, and we'll be right back.
A Sunday outlook on life may do more than make you smile. New research suggests it could also guard against heart attacks, strokes, and early death. In the review of 15 studies that collectively involved almost 230,000 men and women, the findings were remarkably consistent, the study authors added. Lead author Dr. Alan Rozanski said they found optimists had a 35% lower risk for the most serious complications due to heart disease compared to pessimists. He is a professor of cardiology at Mount Sinai St. Luke's Hospital in New York City. That mind-body connection held up across all age groups, said investigators, ranging from teenagers to those in their 90s. That suggests that optimism may be an asset regardless of age, Rozanski noted. The findings were published September 27th in the journal JAMA Network Open. Here's a compelling reason to keep those dreaded appointments with your dentist. New research suggests that red, tender, or bleeding gums could trigger high blood pressure. In a review of 81 studies that included more than 250,000 people, UK scientists found that those who had moderate to severe gum disease had a 22% increased risk for high blood pressure, and those with severe gum disease had a 49% higher risk. Oral health is closely linked to general health, explained researcher Dr. Francesco D'Aiuto, head of the periodontology unit at University College London's Eastman Dental Institute. Looking after your teeth and gums is often neglected, he added, but it should be as important as managing other general health risks. The report was published September 24th in the journal Cardiovascular Research. Excessive exercise can tire out your brain to the point that you have trouble making decisions, a new study claims. The findings show that despite the benefits of endurance sports, an excessive training load can have ill effects on your brain, French researchers said. Study author Mathias Pesiglioni of Hôpital de la Petite-Salpêtrière in Paris said our findings draw attention to the fact that neural states matter. You don't make the same decisions when your brain is in a fatigued state. For the study, the researchers had 37 male endurance athletes either continue normal training or increase training 40% a session over 3 weeks. Functional MRIs showed the overloaded athletes had a slower response in the lateral prefrontal cortex. The results are in the September 26th Current Biology. Walking speed may indicate whether young stroke survivors are ready to return to work, a new study suggests, and 3 feet per second may be the threshold that predicts whether they can meet a workday's challenges. One of every four people who has a stroke is younger than 65 years old. As many as 44% may be unable to return to work, largely because of difficulty walking, the study authors said. Hannah Jarvis, the study's lead author, said stroke affects motor control and motor function. To return to work, you must be able to walk to your car, bus, office, and meeting rooms. She's a research associate at Manchester Metropolitan University in England. For the study, Jarvis and her colleagues compared mobility in 46 stroke survivors from Wales, aged 18 to 65, with 15 people who had not had a stroke. The report was published September 26th in the journal Stroke.
We have Kathleen Trottier pre-recorded with the Fittest Future Self. Here she is. Now, your book that you've just written is Your Future Fittest Self? Is that what it's called?
Absolutely. And it's all about making choices today that's going to create the fitter future you. And also just how to connect the dots between wishing for a healthier, happier, fitter you and actually creating that fitter future you. And I think that a lot of people have these grand health wishes and, you know, they're like, okay, tomorrow I'll do it or the next week. And most of the time it's because they're waiting for that perfect day or that perfect week to get started. And one of the main takeaways of the book is there's no perfect week. There's no perfect day. There's always going to be reasons not to be more active. So you just have to start now. And if today is not the perfect day, but you still get a little bit more walking in than you would have otherwise, that's great. You know, that perfection is a very unrealistic goal. And when you strive for it, that you set yourself up for failure. And I'm all about setting yourself up for success.
Wonderful. And what do you mean by this individualized health mix that you have in your book?
Yeah, so I think another thing that I like to get across to people is that often people try to find the perfect program, right? They go to the bookstore or they go online and it's like, what's the best, most perfect program? It's keto, it's your CrossFit, it's running. And, you know, what I always say to people is there's pros and cons to every program. And the trick is instead of trying to find something that's most perfect, you try to find and create something that works for you. You find your fit. because, you know, the benefits of the quote-unquote best workout are moot if you can't actually make yourself do it or you injure yourself while you're doing it. So I like to use my parents as an example when I talk about this, about finding your fit and sort of thriving in your own lane. My mom loves to garden. She loves to walk. She loves to do yoga. My dad loves to play hockey. If I said to my mom, you know, the only way you're going to be fit is if you play hockey 4 days a week, she'd look at me like I was crazy, and then she'd be like, well, I'd rather just not be fit. And if I said to my dad, like, you know, the way you're going to have to be fit is to go for meditative walks with the dog, again, he'd look at me like, why, are you insane? So they have found something that works for them under the mindset that being active is a non-negotiable, but how you get that activity is up to you. So the first book, so I have two books, and the first book is Finding Your Fit, and it's really about figuring out which fitness personality is and then creating a program based on that personality. Mm-hmm. So I have four personalities. So the gym bunny, the home bunny, the busy multitasker, and the competitive bunny. So that's the, you know, if you love to go to the gym, then do that. If you are really competitive, join CrossFit. You know, if you like to work out at home, do that. As long as you understand that being active is a non-negotiable, how you define that activity is really up to you and your goals and your individual version of fit.
And in your mixed concept, it's more than one activity to keep fit and to keep you at it all the time.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, great question. Yeah, so the second book sort of takes that concept of finding your fit and creates a more detailed program. So it's not just kind of do what works for you. It's here are the components that have to be in a workout mix. So there's three mixes. There's the workout mix, the nutrition mix, and the mindset mix. So the book goes through, you know, all of the different workouts available, and it says, okay, so here are the pros and cons of each workout. Then it goes through, you know, 20 different diets. Here are the pros and cons of each diet. And then it goes through a bunch of different mindset modalities, like meditation and self-talk. And then, again, pros and cons. And then your job as the reader is to curate a mix that works for you based on your individual pros and cons. But I give you some guidelines. So I say, you know, every workout mix has to have a cardiovascular activity, and then I explain what that is. And I say every workout mix has to have a strength component, and I define what that is and how you can get it. Every mix has to have a flexibility stretching component. So you know how you're trying to build the mix, and then you create the elements of that works for you. So again, you know, I'll use my mom as an example. I brought her to a spin class one time because I was teaching it, and she got off the bike and at the end of the class, and she looked at me and she goes, Kathleen, I love you more than anything on earth, and I would literally do anything for you except that if you ever try to make me do that spin class again, like, I will disown you. So right? So spin is one option for cardio, but if you hate it, that's not the option that you should do, right? And so that's sort of the ethos of the book is that exercise should be empowering and invigorating, and it should be tailored to you, and it should be something that, you know, you might not love every single workout, but you shouldn't, you know, hate it. It shouldn't be something you dread. It should be tailored to your version of fit and your goals. You know, so if you're training for a marathon, then your fit is going to be different than if your goal is to just be able to get down and off the ground with your grandkids, right? And no one version of fit is better than the other, as long as you're, you know, embracing that movement is non-negotiable.
Absolutely. Are there any combinations of workout, like the mixed together, that just wouldn't work? Or is everything flow together as far as workouts?
I really like that question. I think it's, you know, partly you sort of have to start with what's your A priority. And what that means is, for example, for me, I absolutely love running. That's my, like, absolute bliss. But running is hard on the body. So I know that for me to be able to run injury-free, I have other things that I have to make myself do. So I wouldn't, since I run, which is high impact, I then wouldn't cross train with another high impact activity. I tend to cross train with biking or swimming because I also do triathlon. But I also, because I love to run, I make myself do strength training, and which I don't hate strength training, but I don't love it. Like I love to run. But I say to myself, my self-talk is, you know, Kathleen, if you want to run injury-free, you have to be able to support yourself on one leg. You need to be able to do balance training. You know, when you run, every time your foot hits the ground, it's about six times your body weight that your kinetic chain has to dissipate those forces. So it's hard. So, and again, that's how I make myself stretch. Like, I don't love doing yoga. It's almost like the least favorite thing, but I make myself do some yoga or some stretching because I'm like, you know, Kathleen, if you want to run, you can't be hobbling all around. So I think it's not that everything flows together, but it is that there is, you know, there is balance in everything. And you have to sort of read the book and know yourself and know, you know, how much stress your body can use. So in the book, I walk you through different questions you might ask, like, you know, when in the past have you been the most fit? When in the past have you been injured? When in the past have you been the least fit? And then I try to help readers do the things that they've enjoyed in the past and not do the things that have sort of injured them in the past. And pinpoint where their individual triggers are and how to set themselves up for success. So, you know, I was listening to the intro for the show and you were saying that the second half you were talking to somebody about morning routines. And I love the fact that my interview comes before the doctor's interview on morning routines because so much of my book is creating systems that sort of save yourself from your future self. And for a lot of people, a morning routine is that. Like if they can get their morning routine down, you know, they kind of win the morning, win the day. And that can be a system that really allows them to be like, okay, I've done my workout. I feel really good. So that way I'm not going to eat crap throughout the day. You know, I'm going to get to bed at a really good time because I know I have to work out in the morning. And it's sort of a positive domino effect.
Right. Kathleen, you mentioned the concept of the nutrition mix as well. What is the foundation of a healthy nutrition mix?
Well, again, you know, one of the things I love about the book is that it allows you to sort of tailor your triggers and your needs and then pick the diets or the program that works for you. So in general, I like to promote awareness and a priority on healthy, real food with ingredients that you can pronounce. Like, you know, broccoli, the ingredient is broccoli. Egg, the ingredient is eggs. And lots of water. And just listening to your body. Like, are you stopping when you're full? Are you eating when you're hungry? Are you eating because you're sad? Are you eating because you're angry? And then when you do those emotional eatings, like noting that. So one of the things I try to stress in the nutrition mix is that no matter what program you pick, those pillars of health have to be there. Like, you have to learn to listen to your body, and you have to learn to stop when you're full. Because no matter what program you're doing, it doesn't work if you're doing that. Like, you know, if you're on Weight Watchers, for example, like, yeah, there's free foods like vegetables, right? But if you've already eaten to fullness and you're kind of stuffed, no matter what, like eating a pound of extra carrots is not going to be good for you, right? Even if it's quote-unquote free. So navigating any nutritional creation of a mix really also requires knowing yourself. So another example would be intermittent fasting, right? So a lot of people are on that bandwagon. And so I would say, well, one of the benefits of it is that you have a window where you can't eat food. And so if you're somebody where your biggest negative bang for your buck is that you eat tons of calories, you know, after dinner, then something like an intermittent fast where you do like a 12 by 12 where you don't eat between 8 and 8, or you do a 18-6 intermittent fast where you don't eat until noon, but you also stop eating at 8 o'clock at night, that might be really good for you, not because intermittent fasting is in and itself the best diet, but because your biggest downfall is eating, you know, between 9 and midnight, which a lot of people do. They eat really well during the day, and then they eat too much after dinner. So right, that kind of close the kitchen aspect of that diet might really work for you. But if you're somebody who never eats after 8 o'clock, then doing an intermittent fast might not help you lose or get any healthier at all. Like if you're somebody who overeats at lunchtime, you know, you go out for big meals with your firm or with your office, then something like an intermittent fast won't be helpful. So you kind of have to know who you are, what you like to do, where you make the biggest sort of mistakes. So if you're somebody who eats a lot of sugar, maybe the only thing you need to do is just say, you know what, I'm not going to eat any foods, you know, that are processed and high in sugar.
Right. Kathleen, we're going to have to go to a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about this. Okay.